Our next case is Barbie Bassett versus Gray Media Group. Are you ready to proceed, counsel? Is it Mr. Wade?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honor, assuming for the sake of argument that the defendants are 100% correct and that the only way you can prove a case of race discrimination under Title VII is to use the McDonnell-Douglas factors. The only way that a plaintiff can see a jury trial is to use the McDonnell-Douglas factors. Assuming they're right about that, which they're not, but assuming they are, summary judgment should not have been granted in this case. There were obviously issues of material fact as to whether Barbie Bassett met the McDonnell-Douglas elements. I'm going to run through them. I hope I'm not insulting the court's intelligence by doing this, because we've had, as the counsel says, hundreds of these cases, and everybody knows what the elements are, but I'm just putting them to the facts of this case. In the first place, she's qualified for the job. She had it for nearly two decades. Her co-workers, the ones who were deposed, and her immediate supervisor all bragged on her performance. The only one that had any criticism was somebody never dealt with her, the station manager. She's qualified for the job. They don't dispute that. She was fired. They don't dispute that. They continued to seek other applicants, which is all McDonnell Douglas requires to make a prima facie case, but they ended up hiring a person of the opposite race. Therefore, she met a prima facie case. Now, the next thing, and the main reason I say we absolutely should have gone to the jury on this case is they never did articulate, the next step is, the burden's on them now to articulate not only a legitimate reason, but a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. A legitimate non-discriminatory reason. I wanted to point out to the court, we both quoted portions of this corporate.
Are we on the same page about what the reason given for the termination was? Didn't they complain about criticism that they received from either viewers or the audience?
Well, I'd say there's some inconsistency in what they say. What they say in the briefs and basically what they said in the corporate deposition was that they terminated her because she used a racial term. That's what they say. Now, they argue that all of that's kind of varying about exactly why, but the reason articulated would be articulated by the corporate representative, and his articulated reason is because she used a racial term. But let's assume that's true, Your Honor. We don't have to assume it's true, we know it's true. They did get reaction from predominantly, if not almost all, black viewers said they objected to it.
Would it matter one way or the other if the audience members who objected were black, white, or something else?
Yes, ma'am, it would matter because it would go to help decide whether a racial motivation is behind it. If we have one race that's on one side of a question, the opposite race is on the opposite side, and the decision maker chooses one race over the other, then that's just one fact that you could infer that racism, that a race considerations are entering into. It doesn't have to be racism, but race is entering into the equation. That's just one factor you could decide.
Isn't that exactly what happened with the first comment for which she was written up? Why is this different?
I don't necessarily think they are different. They're pretty much the same thing. They're both neutral. They're both neutral words. And in each case, the preferences of the majority of black persons that complain is accepted over the white persons who even didn't know what the term meant or thought she hadn't done anything wrong or anything racist. So I do think that's just one indication.
But yet she chose to apologize after the first comment, after realizing that she'd offended people with her comment and that it was perceived negatively, even though she said she did not intend it that way, that she was horrified to learn that it was offensive and had an offensive connotation. Why is the second one different?
I don't know if it's a legal matter. I don't know if there is any distinction. However, the fact that she apologized indicates that they're, to me, what indicates is they're accusing her of saying something racist when they know very well, or a jury could find very well, they know she hadn't said anything racist because she didn't know the term grandmammy. And I still don't know today after looking in the dictionary, it apparently really doesn't, that the term grandmammy has some racist connotation. It's apparently not known to the people that write the dictionaries, because but it's apparently some people think that it does. But when she said, here's her testimony, I was mortified when I learned that there are people, apparently our own employees, that think that is a racist term. I was mortified. And she went to the black workers that worked at the station and apologized to them. That's what she did when she learned it. So she went, and Your Honor, she also wrote her own letter of apology, which according to the station was too long. They made it short and read it on air. So she's mortified by any idea that she was offending them. She's mortified. So that's an indication that their reason that she's claiming she made a racist statement is wrong or pretextual.
Let me be more clear in my question. I think I was too vague. She did not allege that she was discriminated against on the basis of race after the reaction to her use of the first word, but she is alleging discrimination based on race after the same reaction to the second phrase.
Well, Your Honor, the second phrase is what got her terminated. When she used the first phrase, there's no need to, you know. She agreed with them. If I offended somebody, then I apologize. Why would she file any type of suit or make any claim about that? She's still working there. She still got her job. And she realized that certain people were offended. In the "fashizzle by nizzle" comment, she was in a much more defensible position because she was familiar with Snoop Dogg. Unlike these white guys that fired her, she was familiar with Snoop Dogg. And she knew, and this is one definition in the dictionary, one of two, one racist and one non-racist. But one of them is, for sure, my friend. She knew that. She knew enough about Snoop Dogg to know that. And so when they tell her you're using something racist, her natural reaction is, no, I'm not. I know what the word means. It means, for sure, my friend. So she indicated that she's at least more familiar with the black culture than these guys that are firing her for being racist were, because she at least knew what the term meant. And that gets back to the falsity, why I say there were issues of material fact as to whether the reasons were false, Your Honor. They said themselves, here they are, they're the big wigs down at the station, the station manager, the news director. Well, we don't know what that means. Well, why don't they? They ought to. I mean, maybe they're the racists. They don't keep up with black culture, apparently. So they don't know what the term means they've never heard of.
In both instances, there was criticism or critiques that came from outside of the company. Am I incorrect about that?
You're absolutely correct, 100% correct. And that, however, Your Honor, would not keep the fact under the Civil Rights Act as amended from race from being a factor. The fact that they've got criticism, well, let's say it was from whites or blacks or whatever it was, that wouldn't mean that there wasn't some racist reason that race didn't go into the decision. They admitted race went into the decision, Your Honor. I want to point this out. At the corporate deposition, I'm not talking about what we've already quoted, but here's something where we went on and neither side quoted. This is on page 487. Both sides have talked about 485 and 486, but there was some follow-up to that on 487. And I repeated my question. My question is, you don't have information or facts that you could tell us that would indicate that you would fire a black person for saying, for shizzle my nizzle, do you? And that's the question. You don't have any facts to show that you would fire a black person for saying, for shizzle my nizzle, do you? It hasn't happened. So I don't know. In other words, here he is. He's saying that he doesn't know that he would fire a black person for it, but he knows very well he would fire a white person for it because he just got through doing it. That's from that, Your Honor, they have not articulated a non-discriminatory reason. They've articulated that this is a word that we'd fire a white person for using, but we don't know whether we'd fire a black person or not. So how are they articulating a non-discriminatory reason? So they didn't meet the McDonnell-Douglas test as so far. No, they didn't meet it, then we should have gone to the jury. Let me mention McDonnell Douglas a little bit, Your Honor, because I feel like I know a lot of it. I've done it in my whole law practice. I feel like I know a little bit about it. McDonnell Douglas was decided by the Supreme Court because to help plaintiffs, basically in civil rights cases, because they don't have direct evidence. They wanted to come up with a methodology whereby people could prove discrimination without having direct evidence. That's why we had McDonnell Douglas in the first place. Back in those days, we lived in the Jim Crow South, or I did in the Jim Crow South, where they figured black all white juries would decide against black plaintiffs. They created an equitable remedy so there'd be no jury trials. And they came up with this indirect method. It was designed to assist the plaintiffs, to try to give them a fair shake. That was the purpose of it back at that time. Well, today, before I go any further with this, today it's totally been turned on its head. And now what it is a mechanism for keeping cases from going to the jury. I saw a law review article, I've cited a bunch of articles in there. One of them says that 94% of cases under Title VII never reach a jury. The judge uses, but primarily McDonnell Douglas, to throw them out. They never make it to a jury. The Seventh Amendment is a lost cause as so far as Title VII and McDonnell Douglas is concerned. They never make it to a jury. But I am not saying, and I understand that your honors can't overrule what, you know, the Fifth Circuit in hundreds of cases has said, well, it's McDonnell Douglas, that decides everything. We go through these technical rules, and if you lose on those technical rules or we decide you lose, you're out of here, no jury trial. But I do not believe this court has squarely held that if plaintiff cannot meet McDonnell Douglas, but has other evidence of discrimination, that a reasonable jury could find discrimination, then we can't use that evidence. So all I'm saying, and this is a little different from what all the, you know, there's so many judges, I guess the latest judge in the Fifth Circuit, have criticized McDonnell Douglas and essentially said it's not fair to the plaintiffs. They've diverted the whole issue from whether there's discrimination to a bunch of technical rules that are hard to follow, hard to apply, or inconsistent with Rule 56. But I know the court can't do anything about that, or your honors, the panel can't do anything about it. However, I do not believe there's any reason the court cannot say, cannot hold that, even if your honors say, well, you didn't meet McDonnell Douglas, but you do have proof from which a jury could infer discrimination, that that's enough. If we have proof in the record from which the jury could infer discrimination, then that's enough. And your honor, the reason I say that the court should do that is there are two Supreme Court cases, at least two, that I know that have held that or have allowed the plaintiff to prevail even without meeting McDonnell Douglas. One of them, they're both cited in my brief. One of them is McDonnell, the Santa Fe Trail. This is where they had a black employee that was stealing, and I believe it was the white employee that was stealing, and they fired him, but they had a black employee who was stealing, and they did not fire him. The articulated reason was theft. Well, you fired, you know, you committed theft. The Supreme Court never got into McDonnell Douglas. If we were going to apply McDonnell Douglas rigidly, then they never could have got past McDonnell Douglas because they had a legitimate reason, that is, you were stealing. But the Supreme Court didn't look at McDonnell Douglas, and they said, well, they have to be applied equally, and this is a civil rights violation. The other one was Price Waterhouse v. Hopkins, which is also cited in my brief, where the McDonnell Douglas factors aren't decided. They just say that this person, according to the employer, was fired both for sex-based reasons and non-based reasons. They made sex-based comments about her, and they also made legitimate non-discriminatory comments, but they never, I believe they expressly said that we realize it is not consistent with McDonnell Douglas in some respects, but in those two cases, even though McDonnell Douglas was not met, the Supreme Court allowed a finding of race discrimination. Your Honor, here is the evidence as to why we believe a jury could find race discrimination. The first place is they did not, they gave pretextual reasons. They claim that she's made a racial statement. The Fasizzle My Nizzle statement is a racial statement. They claim that. But they know that's false. They know that that she has no racist intent. They know it based on the way she handled the earlier incident. They know that she gave them a dictionary definition, a definition that's consistent with what's in the dictionary. They know that she apologized because she didn't want to offend anybody. They themselves didn't know. They couldn't come in there and say, we know that's a racist statement when they don't know what it meant. And they said they didn't know what it meant. So they had no basis for making a claim that she'd made a racist statement.
But she does have an employment agreement that requires her to not engage in any conduct that could reflect negatively on the station or its reputation in the community. And that requires her not to commit any act or become involved in any situation which may bring Bassett into public disrepute, contempt, scandal, or ridicule, or tend to shock, insult, or offend the community, or which may reflect unfavorably on Bassett. The public criticism that was received and the viewer complaints that were received, why is that not in violation of that part of the employment agreement? And if it is, wouldn't it be an objective reason?
Well, in the first place, let me assume Your Honor's right. Let's assume that was a violation, that that the community was offended. And
we don't have to assume it. Is there record evidence that they received your complaints?
Yes, ma'am, but it's race-based. It's from black predominantly. They vary back on whether it's predominantly or all, but it's overwhelmingly black.
Why does that matter?
Ma'am?
Why does that matter?
Because if you choose one race, definition of discrimination is to treat differently. If you treat differently the opinions of white viewers when they're 50-50 market from black viewers, then that's, by the definition, that's discriminatory.
Are there comments from white viewers in the record?
Those defending her, well, I don't think there's any actual comments from anybody in the record. I don't think there's any. I better not say that. I don't think there are. I don't think there's any actual comments. There's just the testimony in the deposition that we received negative comments, especially about the first comment from a black pastor saying we're going to boycott because she used the term mammy. But as far as the comments themselves, I don't think there are, but they testified that the overwhelming comments that they got from black viewers was against Bassett. The overwhelming number they got from white viewers was pro-Bassett. So
in relation to the first time she used an offensive verb.
Yeah, I think Your Honor's correct about that. I'm not clear about the fascism my nasal comment. Your Honor's certainly correct as to the first one, though. I'm not certain. I'm not sure what the record shows about that second one.
So I guess it's the answer to Judge Douglas's question that you can't point to evidence in the record showing that the complaints were only from African Americans with regard to the second comment?
I'm having trouble remembering what the public reaction was to the second comment. I remember about the public reaction to the first. I can't remember about what the public reaction. I don't want to guess, Your Honor. Counsel can probably tell you, but I somehow I just can't remember what it was. To tell you the truth, but regardless, let's assume, Your Honor. Let's assume, Judge Douglas.
You're out of time, so I'll let you conclude your comments.
Okay. I'll.
And you've saved time.
That wouldn't mean that race wasn't a factor. The fact they were legitimate factors wouldn't mean that race wasn't also a factor, which is all the Civil Rights Act of 91 occurs. So that's why I say that, taking as true what Your Honor said, that wouldn't mean race didn't play a part.
Okay, thank you. And you've saved time for a rebuttal, I believe.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Hodges.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Kim Hodges, and I'm counsel for the defendant appellee in this matter, Gray Media, doing business as WLBT. This case presents a straightforward question, whether an employer can terminate an on-air news anchor who twice used racially offensive language during live broadcasts within a six-month period, despite having received a written warning after the first incident. The answer under this court's well-established precedent is unequivocally yes. The district court correctly granted summary judgment in favor of WLBT because appellant Barbie Bassett failed to produce competent evidence sufficient to demonstrate a genuine issue of material fact as to either pretext or mixed motive, and we therefore respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's decision in all respects. I know that the court has a very, very good understanding of the facts and the background of the case. There are a few points that I would like to highlight that I hope don't get lost. I will, just so that I don't forget it or have it get lost in the time, though, I think I can help with some of the record citations you were seeking earlier, so I'll do that first. With respect to the first comment that Ms. Bassett made on October 28, 2022, Charlie Jones testified in his deposition at record 397 to 398 that the majority, but not all of the viewers who complained were black. He also testified, and I think it's in that same vicinity in the record, that not all of the complaints were in a form that would permit him to know the race of those that complained. With respect to the second comment, March 8th, 2023 comment, Mr. Jones testified that he first learned about the comment from his executive producer, Alex Bukowski, that's at record 413, that there was an immediate bad reaction from the employees in the courtroom, in the control room, excuse me, same record citation, that there was an enormous amount of viewer outrage. Mr. Jones testified to that at record citation 418 to 420, but he did not know the race of everyone who complained in the same location. Mr. Jones further testified that more people who complained knew the more sensitive meaning of the faux shizzle comment. That's at record 425. He did make the assumption that the majority of the, from context, that the majority of the complaints were coming from African-American viewers. That is at record 425. Ted Fortenberry, in his corporate representative deposition, testified a little further on this one point, and then I'm almost done with the record citations, that both employees and viewers commented on the fact that the comment was offensive. That's at record 484. Mr. Fortenberry testified that white employees also complained. That's at record 487-88, although I believe he testified he couldn't remember a specific individual, but that white employees did complain. And he also testified, and I think it's a point worth making, in his 30B6 testimony at record 490, that that the term that was used, or the implication of the N-word in the term, can offend anyone. Doesn't necessarily have to be someone of one race or another. A little bit more of the factual background of the case that I think is important to not get lost in the shuffle here is that, as the court's aware, Ms. Bassett was on-air talent. She is not an employee who only has exposure to a few other employees. This is someone who is on the air broadcasting on behalf of the station. That brings with it an increased level of responsibility. Ms. Bassett admitted that herself when she was deposed, and her colleague, longtime anchor Maggie Wade Dixon, similarly described the job as being all about credibility and trust. And so when viewed through that lens, there's even more impact from the statements that are being made on air, because there's more of a responsibility to ensure that you're being responsible about what language and statements you're using in that role. There is not any dispute that these statements were made on air. There's obviously not any dispute that both employees and viewers had an extreme reaction to them. It was not a small reaction. There was an extreme reaction. And there's not a dispute that after the first incident, when Ms. Bassett was given a written warning for her conduct, she was advised at that time that any future conduct of this nature could result in her termination. I've mangled the quote, but that's what the statement said. And then less than 6 months later, Ms. Bassett, again on air, makes a statement in on-air banter that demonstrates a lack of understanding or a lack of adherence to the trust and the responsibility that she has as on-air talent by using a phrase that has among its many meanings, if there are many meanings, but has among its meanings, the term "for sure" with the N-word. And that upset a lot of employees. It was an immediate reaction. This wasn't something that the people who were offended had to think about very much. It was an immediate reaction, both from Ms. Bassett's colleagues on air, Ms. Bassett's colleagues in the station, and from viewers. WLBT heard an immediate reaction from it, and at that point, as she'd already been warned, believed it needed to take action and terminated her employment. The district court reviewed all of these facts and reviewed the record as a whole and have correctly applied the McDonnell-Douglas framework. I think the very obvious point, and I'm certainly happy to discuss it further, but the very obvious point is that the McDonnell-Douglas framework is current Supreme Court precedent and is the precedent of this circuit, albeit a modified version that allows for the mixed motive analysis, which was applied in this case. WLBT did, contrary to what appellant has just asserted, did articulate a legitimate non-discriminatory reason when it explained that it terminated Ms. Bassett for not once but twice using offensive language on air after having been warned not to do so. After that, the district court then correctly took reviewed the case through the lens of a pretext analysis. Ms. Bassett had not been able to produce any evidence, any credible evidence, of discriminatory intent or any actions that would allow a reasonable fact finder to conclude a discriminatory motive. And so the district court correctly found that she had not demonstrated pretext. Looking then at the question of whether she demonstrated mixed motive, the district court used the Fifth Circuit's modified McDonnell-Douglas analysis to review that question, and also found that she just not produced any evidence sufficient to show that that race had been a motivating factor in her termination at all. Ms. Bassett asserts that first that the court should have relied on credited the testimony of Ted Fortenberry in a way that implied a race-based motive, but the district court correctly found that that she selectively chosen pieces of that testimony out of the deposition testimony and had not included the complete testimony on that point. Ms. Bassett asserts that that the district court should have allowed her should have found that that there was a race-based motive because there were alternative meanings to the term that she used on air, the second term that she used on air, and also that she didn't mean to cause any offense. And frankly, neither of those things matter. The question here is whether she used a term on air that the fact that the decision makers had an honest belief was offensive, and then the action that they took as a result of that comment, whether it was race neutral. And in this case, the district court found that it clearly was. In short, Ms. Bassett has not been able to produce sufficient evidence under any analysis, whether the court's using the required McDonnell-Douglas analysis or any other, has not been able to produce any evidence to show that there was a race-based motive in any of WLBT's actions. It's undisputed that she made the comments on air. It's undisputed that there was an enormous negative reaction by both employees and by viewers. It is undisputed that the second comment she made came after she'd already been warned. It's undisputed that she has no evidence of any similarly situated employee who was treated more favorably. And it's undisputed that there's no evidence of any comments or any other indicia of a race-based motive from the decision makers at WLBT. So in short, there just isn't any evidence in the record to suggest that WLBT's legitimate non-discriminatory reason was pretextual or that her race was a motivation in her termination at all. I'm happy to entertain any other questions that the court may have, but barring that, then we respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wade, you have rebuttal?
Your Honor, the first problem I have is the first thing she said and the last thing we were questioning about. The fact that this violates, let's assume, and I'll take it as proven, that this violates a work rule, that this violates some work rule. That does not mean that race did not enter into the equation. We can't open up their heads and say that we looked in there and we see in your head that you treat or have an intent to treat blacks and whites differently. But we know what they said. We know they said at corporate deposition there's some things that blacks can say that whites can't say. And we know then that he attempted to retract that later on in his deposition and say that rule doesn't apply to TV anchors. And we know that then when asked the direct question, would you have fired, if this had been a black person making this same statement, would you have fired him? And he says, I don't know. It's up to the jury, Your Honor. To me, the heart of this question is the Seventh Amendment right to have a jury decide, not to let her say that, well, we have overwhelming evidence that they had good reasons to fire her. The question is not whether they had good reasons to fire her, but whether or not they treated a black person differently than what they would have treated a white person. And when you ask them the question, would you have fired this had this been a black person that said the same thing, and they said, I don't know, then to me that's circumstantial evidence.
Can you point to anything in the record that shows that a person of a different race from her was treated differently based on the same facts?
No, ma'am, there's no other, there's no, as corporate representative counsel said, this hasn't occurred. We haven't had a black person say it. So I don't know whether the, you know, that hasn't arisen. But there's still, that hasn't arisen.
So if it hasn't arisen, how is the possibility that it might sufficient to create a genuine issue of material fact?
Well, to me, it's a genuine issue because we know for a fact, according to him, and it is a fact, indisputable fact, they fired a white person, or at least a jury could find, they fired a white person for using the phrase for shizzle my nizzle. We know that for a fact. They themselves told us, the corporation itself told us, we do not know whether we would have fired a black person for using the same term.
So he also says in that, in the same deposition, that he made the statement that it doesn't matter if they're black or white. On our television station, there are things that they can't say regardless of race. Why isn't that fatal to your claim?
Because, Your Honor, the jury decides the facts. They can decide if they want to under Reeves. They can say, we absolutely don't believe, we don't think you're telling the truth. The second time, we think you told the truth the first time when you said there's certain things that blacks can say that whites can't. If you're on the jury, under the seventh, and we think we're entitled to let the jury decide. Your Honor, we're not living in the 60s where the jury's going to be all black. The jury will be racially mixed in Jackson, Mississippi. We have Ms. Bassett has a constitutional right to have the jury decide the facts, and he absolutely contradicts himself. And the jury, it should be up to the jury to decide. It's not up to the judge to decide. Well, I believe he, according to him, here's what he said. So far as TV anchors are concerned, neither race can say it. He did say that. It's up to the jury as to whether or not they believe that. It's not up to the court. It shouldn't be up to the court to decide we believe that.
Well, how, in order for it to go to the jury, the statements have to be contradictory. How are they contradictory if the first statement is in general and the second is specific as to the employees of this TV station?
Your Honor, if the court please, with all due respect, I believe Your Honor is weighing the evidence. And we could argue that. That was the more, they're contradictory. And if you have the attitude going in, there's certain people that black persons can say that white people can't say, then a jury can infer you have a discriminatory attitude. It's not like there's been no word here that actually we could say generally is a racist term. As I pointed out in a reply brief, the term mammy is a complimentary word, not a derogatory word. The term for shizzle my nizzle can be taken either way. In that Rule 28J letter, I pointed out to the United States Supreme Court, it said you have to look at the context of a word. The term boy was what was involved in there. In context here, they could have known they were not telling the truth about her, or a jury could find they were not telling the truth about her because they knew that she was not a racist and because they knew that they themselves didn't know that term had any racial connotation. So all we're really saying, Your Honor, is we think a jury should decide the case. And even accepting as correct that there's some, I never have met a perfect employee yet, assuming she made accepting that she made something that violates the handbook, that doesn't prove that race, conclusively, that race was not a factor. So we'd ask the court to allow a racially mixed jury in Hines County to decide this case. Southern District in Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. The case has been submitted. That concludes our arguments for today. Court will stand in recess until tomorrow at 1 p.m. Thank you.